Coming to you live from a radio tower near you, studying the intersections of video games and science. This is PokéScience.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to PokéScience.
Home of the Pokéburger. How may I take your order?
It's an exciting new situation. We're going to learn all about Pokéburgers today. That's the real... Haha, it's April Fool's, except a long time later.
I mean,
welcome to PokéScience.
I mean,
they better be vegan given our subject matter today.
Yeah, it's gonna be helpful. I will say, if you're buying burgers in India, they do like the McDonald's and Burger King's and all that. They will have a number of different. It's not just the standard beef patty plus
goat burgers
for a variety of reasons.
Can you get goat
in the north? Probably.
I love goat. Goat burgers.
Goat burger sounds fascinating to me. Unfortunately, has nothing to do with the topic at hand. Welcome to PokéScience. Today we're doing a topic on Hinduism, which is very exciting for me because I've kind of grown up and practice and still practice and will continue to practice Hinduism. So I know a little bit about the topic, not a lot, but enough that I can say I'm a practicing Hindu. With me here, the voices that you can hear are Madison and Ben, who are joining us
today. Hello, hello.
I'm just here because I want to talk about holy.
Yes. Okay. We're going to talk about, basically, I know the title probably has something to do with Hinduism and we will talk a lot about Hinduism. Wow. This also might just be the India episode as well. Cause they're both very correlated with each other.
Yeah.
And a lot of column A refers to column B and vice versa, which is very, very exciting.
But, holy, which is like, you know, that's one of the main holidays, right? Holy
yep,
and Diwali.
It's,
right?
Yeah. It's one of the big two, if you want to consider it.
Yeah. And that was, what, March, was that 18th?
It's or late 20... March. The dates change. It's
yeah.
like the 20-something. 20...
This year was the 25th.
That's 25th, it. I was going to say, it was either the 18th or 25th, because I remembered it was like a, it was a Monday, right?
Yes.
I think so.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's right, because I have Hindu students, and they were very excited for Holi. And at one point, I was going to try to go to a celebration, but life happened. But I like the fest, you know, I love the colors. Like I've done that before in college. My basis was Indian grad student.
Fun. I know about Holi from Pokemon Go. Cause it's a Pokemon Go event.
Oh, did they?
Yeah.
Yeah. They
That's
do
so
have
cool.
I will say Pokemon Go's, especially in recent years, has done a lot of different events based on various different cultures.
Well, I imagine those are markets that they like need to maintain, and I mean, like, India and China are huge markets.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. From a market perspective, absolutely. From a cultural perspective as well, it also helps to bring... Because there's a lot of folks like me that are Hindu in the U.S., and so they can appeal to folks like
Aww,
me and be like,
that's
oh,
awesome.
Yes. And I've noticed we've quickly strayed off topic.
No,
as we,
but it
as
is,
we,
it
as
is
we
topic.
Will do.
It is topic.
That is true. That is true, yeah.
Because we just mentioned a really strong connection to Pokemon that... In
yes.
Pokemon Go, these are actually acknowledged and celebrated on their special mm-hmm. events.
Yes.
And I really like that. That's really great.
It
yeah,
is.
Yeah, next event is Earth Day, so jot that down.
Well, why didn't they do my birthday first? Because my birthday is yesterday as of this recording.
Oh, happy birthday.
Happy birthday.
Woo! As I'm setting up my house for the party right now.
But let's talk a little bit about Hinduism.
Please do.
The exciting culture behind it. I know. Now, I will say, while I am quote unquote running this episode, my knowledge of Hinduism is a drop in the bucket compared to the vast amount of stuff that's existing. And then on top of that, if you spend your whole life studying and practicing and learning it, you will get enough to have a solid day's worth of water. But then there's still the rest of the bucket that actually exists. So it's a very wide amount of things, just a wide variety of stuff. So first off, it is one of the oldest religions in the world, if not the oldest. Of course, a variety of people will debate about these sort of things.
Yeah.
But it's certainly very, very old. You could go back as far as like 5,000 years, depending on when you classify the start date, then it varies from there. But the roots go as far back to the Rig Veda back in roughly 1500 BCE, which is one of the oldest texts in any Indo-European language. I believe it's written in just classic old school Sanskrit, which is very fun and also requires a PhD to read because it's not a it's equivalent to there's going to be a lot of comparisons I'm going to make between Indian related stuff and European related things. So consider Sanskrit the equivalent to Latin. Consider dead language that people study and learn about, and try to use that to be able to understand ancient texts.
Well, but like Latin's also pertinent because it goes into modern like English.
Yep.
Like it is like, exactly, like literally I had to teach Greek and Latin roots this year. That is actually a fourth grade standard, Greek and Latin roots, so that they can learn to recognize different segments of words and define them based upon those segments.
Yep. And to the same extent, Sanskrit is sort of the basis for a lot of, I'm going to talk a lot about like the difference between North India and South India, because there's a large difference between
the two. Too, right? Like very different culturally, very different religiously. Mm-hmm. And there's been, you know, and then you add Pakistan into the mix. You have all sorts of differences in conflict. And then we add England into the mix and you're like, God dang it.
Yeah, there's a lot of differences.
God dang it, colonialism.
I'm going to say this isn't correct by any stretch, but to simplify matters, what I'm about to say is wrong. Understand that. However, it does help understand that, like, India as a whole and the map and the big difference between the north and the south, which is to say, it's not even the north and the south. It's north, middle, separator, south. So there are 20 some odd states. And the reason why I say some odd is because a new one was made in 2014. So I do not know how up to date my numbers are, but for the majority of them, let's say 20 of the 28 states are considered north, to me at least, northern states, and those are languages and cultures that are based off of Sanskrit. And so that's where Hindi comes from, that's where Urdu, Gujarati, Punjabi, a number of different languages sort of have a basis in Sanskrit. Depending on how far north and how far west you go, then they have some Arabic influence as well. Basically, the areas of India, if you want to go way back, that Alexander the Great actually got to, got that Indo-European sort of vibe to it. And that's where a lot of the commonalities sometimes that you see between English and Hindi, for example, there are some common words between them. Not a lot, but some common things between them. Those are primarily with the northern languages. The bottom 5 to 8 states are Dravidian languages. And those are entirely separate, have nothing to do with Sanskrit. And most of them kind of revolve around, not all of them, but some of them revolve around Tamil, which is the primary language down in south. And so between the two, you see a big shift in things there, which has nothing to do with anything except I'm trying to turn this back. The Rig Veda is written in Sanskrit, and that's where all of that sort of devolves into.
There you go. Look at all that. And honestly, I was super excited watching Ms. Marvel. And getting to see like the whole like geopolitical conflict, because they talked about, you know, during the conflict, especially with colonialism and the end of colonialism and all of that conflict. And it was kind of nice to see like those stories represented in a mass media, because I feel like especially in the US, we don't do that enough. And I mean, we're talking about the second most populous part of the world. So like, you know, these are stories that resonate to a lot of people. And the more we, you know, learned about it, the more we understand that, you know, these are old cultures and these are complex situations and complex problems. And I think something that, you know, I try to do is look at, you know, geopolitical issues and try to see, like, what is the entirety of the history, which is really hard when talking about this region of the world.
Yes.
And I know absolutely. You said I almost said Hamilton. Holy crap. Because I was listening to that today.
Different. Sorry. Alexander. Oh boy.
I really needed to hear Guns and Ships this morning. I really needed it. And my students walked in and I was dancing to Lafayette. And they're like, what are you doing? And I was like, I needed this. Give me a break. I know Ben and I talked about this on Ben Richten. So like some of the Greek and even Celtic and Irish mythos and stories and cultures have intertwined with, you know, stuff in India, and you know, we see commonalities, because while people tend to be like, globalism is a new thing that's scary, I mean, it's kind of been around forever. And it's really interesting to see, like, and I like that you brought up the, you know, the connections there, especially with like Alexander the Great showing up and the, you know, connection to different languages and cultures that it brought in. because I think it's important to remember that globalism is not a new phenomena, and it's been around for a long, 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 long time, longer than ancient aliens. Mm-hmm. That racist dude needs to get off TV. That dude be racist.
Oh my god, this cannot become a show about ancient aliens. We could go on and on and on.
This is all just going over my head, and I, based on your reactions, I feel like that's a good thing.
Yeah.
Yes, sure. So Hinduism is the world's third largest religion behind Christianity and Islam, primarily in the South Asia, Southeast Asia, obviously heavily correlated with India, but you see it also in areas that were formerly the colonies, so like the Pakistan, Bangladesh, Sri Lanka areas. You see a lot in Indonesia as well, of people that are Hindu. And of course, globalization, the term of this episode, apparently, this is where you know, we have the Sesame Street sort of thing, like, your word of the day is globalization. You see a lot of people that have, you know, traveled to different countries, and so there's a sizable Hindu population that's in the US and in the UK and South Africa in particular, and a number of different areas that have that the religion has spread as,
I mean, but the
people have traveled.
But the UK also has to do with colonialism, but I mean, like, that's why we had curry in the UK game.
True.
Trust.
Yes.
We will be getting to the Geller influences. Trust.
Yep.
Okay, I trust. I have gotten to read the full script as you guys updated it. Well, I've been busy and my phone is broken currently, yes. So.
That's fun. As usual, when I'm running the show, we're doing things live.
It sounds like a you problem.
Yes, but also I thrive under the inability to know what's going on. Kind of like my understanding of Hinduism. And with that, we turn into the number of denominations and schools of philosophy.
And the text. Just I love talking about the text. Number.
There are a lot of texts, unlike in Christianity and in Islam and in Judaism, where there is generally considered one main text.
Unless you're Mormon. You know,
there is the Bible. Unless you're Mormon. But even Mormons have their specific version. So it's one text that everybody looks towards. In Hinduism, there is not that. There are a wide variety of different texts. The Vedas, the Upanishads, Puranas, Mahabharata, Ramayana. You can tell my Indian accent is really coming out at this point as I pronounce these words. Just a number of different texts that show either a segment or a fraction of the various different ideas and philosophies that come and boil into Hinduism.
I know one of these because I actually wanted to read what it was and learn about it, because Veda is the name of the computer in Gundam 00. And ever since, I have named all of my computers Veda. When you open any of my computers, it will have a number that I gave it, and then it will say Veda. Because those are they're holy texts that bring knowledge, right?
Mm-hmm. So there are four Vedas, which I did not write down and do not remember.
Which matches the Gundam 00, four pilots.
Connections everywhere.
I love Gundam.
let me make sure. So there's the Rig Veda, Yajur Veda, Sama Veda, Atharva Veda. There you go. Which themselves break down into subdivisions and basically extra sections. But they are the oldest. Considered probably the oldest Sanskrit literature, the oldest scripture of Hinduism. If you want to say this was the first big thing text-wise, it would be the Vedas. And then from there, it explodes into a number of different areas and topics. And so the Vedas are generally considered the first ones that have led to a number of different things. And on top of that, because of the sheer volume of information that's out there, Hinduism isn't so much a single religion as it is an umbrella of religions. There are different schools of philosophies, there are different interpretations of the text, leading to a number of diverse practices and beliefs. You could get, you know, 10 different people that practice Hinduism, sit them down and ask them, what is the, you know, what gods do you support, what way do you support things, and all 10 of them could have different answers and results.
I mean, I think that fits most major religions, though, too. You know, having a lot of Muslim students, you know, I know that the different sects are very distinct and have very, sometimes very opposing viewpoints on certain topics. And I know we see that in Christianity, especially. I mean, we saw English, you know, the English entire region, the entire reason for English Christianity came from wanting a divorce. You know, we see Lutheranism, which embraced wealth, which is counterintuitive to pretty much every other aspect of the Bible. And then we saw Catholicism, which, you know, and Orthodox, which are very different in the way that they practice and have integrated other folk cultures and beliefs. And I think a lot of times people like these umbrella terms, but the truth is that, you know, someone I know who's a Baptist might be completely different in their beliefs and values than a Methodist or even an evangelical. And I know the same goes with Hinduism too. My friend, my bassist, Karthik Adreyadebra, his entire house and all, I think there was 20 of them, 20 Indian grad students living in this small house. And I definitely listened to many, many arguments while hanging out there.
Okay, this is so real what we're talking about, because my partner was raised Catholic and I was raised Lutheran, and we talk about how different we are and how different our families are. Yeah. Like these I think you're right that like there's such a diversity.
Well, even in my cousins, like
beliefs,
even within my own family, like one of my cousins, one of my aunts, they went evangelical. One of my aunts is devout Lutheran, one's devout Protestant, and then my family went to a Methodist church. So, like, very, very different interpretations of a lot of things.
Mm-hmm. But you're all grouped under this one label that tries to get the whole story.
I think it's pretty. I like that. I like that we have this connectivity. Sorry for interrupting you all the time, Andrew.
No, it's fine. I love hearing the conversation. The wide amount of, again, this, I don't think of it so much as an umbrella, as almost like a big tree with you know, dozens of different branches, dozens of different twigs off those branches and leaves on them, because you can find like Hinduism, it, you know, some are more popular than others, but you could be an atheistic Hindu, and that makes perfect sense if you follow specific scripts and follow it in a certain way. Or you could be polytheistic, which is sort of the standard expectation of like there are a number of different gods, we support all of them, and go from there. I think there's I found this quote earlier that I didn't write down in the script because of course I'm doing this last minute, from Mahatma Gandhi, who was one of the more popular Indians that you may know, who said, "A man may not believe in God and still call himself a Hindu," and that it makes sense depending on how you read the scripts and how you understand it. Which is a very fun, it's a fun little thing about Hinduism, which is basically like, hey, all of these sort of rules apply for me, but that does not mean they apply for you. If you read it a different way and that's not, you know, causing harm to me, cool.
See,
you know?
I like that approach way better than what we do in the U.S.
Yeah, I was going to say, the U.S. is so anti-pluralistic. We do not allow for that. Like, it's so different.
It's funny, though, because the people that want to push for non-pluralistic come from such opposing sides,
right?
And I'm like,
it's all a paradox.
Like, I almost want to because I mean, like, let's be fair. When I was real little, we did go to a Baptist church for a short bit, and that was completely different than like the Catholic church my stepbrother went to. There is almost no similarity in the way things are done there, the way, you know, things are taught there. Like there's very, very little overlap besides like the main idea of the story. Mm-hmm. And I think people need to appreciate that more. And I want to just bring that up and make that connection, because I'm hoping our listeners really can take the gravitas here for how diverse, you know, this huge religion in one of the most populous places in the world really is.
Yep. Speaking of populous places, let's talk about the Indian influence, because surprise, Hinduism's very big in India, where it was originated and flourished and kind of has been for the most part. So it started, flourished in India. The vast majority of the population practice Hinduism in India. It's to the point where India and Hinduism go hand in hand. So you see it built into the culture in a way that even despite, you know, surprise to my audience, to the audience members that may not know this, I'm of Indian background, born in the U.S., raised in the U.S., but my parents were not. And even despite the amount of connections I think Christianity and the U.S. tend to have, it is nothing like the connections between Hinduism and India.
Well, I mean,
the way that it's baked into the culture.
Let's also be fair. a lot of our founders were actually were deists. or you know, like,
fair point, yes.
Yeah, like Jefferson, you know, kind of like, well, God kind of existed, but then he walked away and who knows what he's doing now. Maybe he's not even real. Who's sure? Because the word agnostic and atheist weren't really a thing in the 1700s. But like, if you read some of the founders of the US, like, you hear a lot of that in the documents they wrote, actually. Mm-hmm. I mean, Thomas Jefferson said that was one of his proudest moments with the separation of church and state. That's on his grave marker more so than anything else.
Mm-hmm.
Because those were his beliefs.
It's in the Jefferson Memorial. I would know. I live near it. Yeah.
Whenever someone says to Thomas Jefferson, though, from now on, all I can imagine is Davy Diggs. I will never imagine anything else the rest of my life.
You know what? That might be fine.
I think it's better. It's better that way.
Yeah, absolutely. It's funny that you mentioned God was there and then wasn't, because that's kind of also a thing depending on based on a certain story in a way that you interpret things, that one of the Indian gods was kind of just like, hey, I'm just kind of watching things from the binoculars, call me if you need something bad, you know, not bad, call me if something bad's happening, I'll fix it, but until then I'm just gonna be like, hey, thumbs up, good job for not screwing things up.
I mean,
terribly.
Every parent listening out there can relate.
That's fun. Like I mentioned, it's deeply integrated into daily life and India, influencing the architecture, the music, the culture. You walk around, you can't go 5 feet without seeing something, whether it's a poster or a building or the music that's being played on the radio that somebody's window's open and you can hear it. Like, it's built into the culture there. As I try to transition now from this into Pokemon itself.
Yes, I was going to say, no, this is an excellent jumping off point for how Hinduism has shown up in the Pokemon games, because we are going to talk about the specific Pokemon creature elements, but I do want to point out there is some Hinduism influence in the games themselves. Kind of, you know, in Galar we see it really directly, and I'll get into that in a second, in Gen 8, but there's some other ones that came before that. So the first guy I found, I wanted to pull out Spencer, which is a lesser known, I feel, character from the Battle Frontier in Gen 3 Emerald. He gives me more Buddhist vibes personally. I see him much more as like a Buddhist figure, but Buddhism and Hinduism do have a deep connection.
Knowing Japan though.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Right.
And not to talk about like the whole bringing Buddhism to India. Now we're getting into Journey into the West, guys. Now we're getting into Journey into the West. We're going to talk about Sun Wukong here.
Oh, perfect. Yeah, well, it's interesting because I didn't even know this, but Spencer is often depicted with an Azurill and a Dusclops, which people have interpreted to be the cycle of birth, life, you know, baby to death. And he's like an old man with a cane, so, which I find interesting. So, and I think Hinduism has a very specific understanding of like the cycle of life and death, as far as I understand.
I think that's a good point. If you want to continue forward, sorry, I'm interrupting here.
Yes, well, there's so many other things. So we saw this a lot in Gen 8 because we alluded to it already, the colonialism of the British Empire in India. So they really put that into the Gen 8 games in Sword and Shield. So we see that with obviously the curry making little mini game you can do. Curry is a, you know, Indian dish, but it's in this British based game. We also have the Kufant and Kaparaja line, which is a kind of retroactive replacement of when they talked about Indian elephants in the Kanto Pokédex. I know y'all remember that from Gen 1. It's specifically in Raichu's Dex entry. So they made a Pokémon to fit that description. And then we also have Chairman Rose, and people have speculated that he is of Indian descent because of basically because of his darker skin tone. But I don't know what other parts of him are Indian or Hindu in culture, but he does give Indian vibes. He looks like an Indian man. So there's that. And
I mean,
we had a bunch of other ones.
Or is he just without race, without culture, because he's just a daddy?
Okay, I listen, but wait, he's also evil.
Andrew is so confused, and Ben and I both get that right away.
No, I blanked out for a split second, and I heard you refer to Chairman Rose as a daddy, and I'm like, that's dangerous. I can fix them territory, and I can't.
That
fix
is
this
not what a daddy is, Andrew. No,
no, but okay, he's
shout out, right. Shout out to Jesse Lee Bishop, one of our listeners, who does an amazing job as a Rose cosplay. Shout out to Jesse.
Oh, that's a good cosplay. That's good. Well, okay, listen. More problematic man, yes. Less problematic champion is Geeta from Gen 9, who people have also speculated is of Indian descent. Specifically, I saw a lot of fan theories that she's actually Romani, and she has Romani heritage, which is another, you know, ethnic group of people that has like a, you know, the byway between India and the UK, which is fascinating to me that they put this woman of Indian descent in such a high powered position in Gen 9, which is really cool. And then we also have in Gen 9, and I feel like this is a Hindu connection, is the psychic gym. If y'all remember that one where you have to fight Tulip before you have to fight her, you have the emotional spectrum practice that you have to do where you have to match the like Metacham's emotions. Mm-hmm. With Dendra, and I saw that it's a very like yoga-esque like embodied form of Pokemon battling. Like it's very specific. It's not really a like a mini game or a thing that you've ever seen in any other gym battle. So I kind of saw that as like a like having a yoga influence and yoga being really connected to Hinduism.
Yeah, absolutely. I think a lot of these are really good examples. I think what Pokemon does really great is combine various aspects of culture. And when we get to the creatures in particular, you will hear a lot of this is this, but it's also this. I think the same is sort of said here, where it's like either references or like if you know what you're looking for, you can find it, kind of like the Spencer Circle of Life thing, the Geeta Romani or Indian influence, Galar being Galar, just in general is like a big Indian influence sort of thing. Which is all really, really cool.
Yeah, what Pokemon creatures have a Hindu influence? That's really what we're here to talk about.
Yes, there's a lot. A lot of them, because Hinduism is widely known for having a lot of gods. It's not 666 million or some absurdly large number that is thrown out there. Which, I mean, if you really boil it down and try to individualize every single aspect of every single god and avatars and like the interpretation language, then maybe you can get to 660 million. If you're like, oh, to this family, it's this, but to that family, because they live on the west side of town instead of east side of town, now it's this. Maybe you'll get to 660 million from there. It's not that much, but you do see a lot of influences in various different Pokemon and the number of different gods. The first, I'm going to steal from the Nordic tradition and Nordic influences, because like I mentioned previously, a lot of... if you interpret it one way, it could be from this area. If you interpret it another way, it's that area. And so let's talk about the Aura Trio, which is Xerneas, Yveltal, and Zygarde. Now, they're widely known, especially the creatures themselves give off Nordic influence. I think literally the deer,
the raven.
It's a snake, that's what it is. Yeah. The deer, the snake, the raven.
Feed at the base of the world tree, the raven sits atop of the world tree, and the snake, snake or dragon, eats at the roots of the world tree.
Mm-hmm. And it's that trio that is providing life, preserving life, destroying life.
Mm-hmm. It's going to become very relevant, I will say, with Pokemon Legends EA very soon.
Yeah. Ooh, yes. But that exact same philosophy is seen in Hinduism. The big three, which now that I think about it, I think a few different religions have a sort of big three. You go to ancient Greece, for example, where it's Zeus, Poseidon, Hades. You go to in Egypt, it's not a big three. I think it's a, depending on interpretation, it's a big five or a big insert number here. But in Hinduism, at least, there's a big three of gods and a big three of goddesses, and each one's kind of paired up, not quite, because in Greek they don't do that. But in Hinduism, there's Brahma, who's the creator of energy that all things come from, a la Xerneas. There is Yveltal, aka Shiva in this case, the destroyer, who destroys the energy, which can be a little bit more negative. It's more of a transformation. It's once you're done, Shiva's the one that breaks you down, and then... puts you towards the process of either reincarnation or moving on or being reborn to something worse. And then there's Zygarde, aka Vishnu, the preserver, who's maintaining things, governing what is made. A very fun theory that I found, which would be fun, is talking a little bit about Thomas Jefferson and the sort of idea that gods made the earth and then disappeared, or made the universe and disappeared. Vishnu,
they just Zygarde, kinda got bored, man. They got bored.
Well, so Zygarde in the XY games and so on isn't really in the games. It's kind of just in the distance watching over things. And mm-hmm. the exact same philosophy is with Vishnu. Vishnu is the preserver that just sits back and is like, hey, if you want to catch me, go find me in the DLC or find me in the Pokemon Z that doesn't come out. So, haha.
That's literally what happened. Yeah.
Yep. So, yeah, Vishnu is the exact same way where they kind of just take a step back and preserve things. In other words, I will come down. And Vishnu is famous for a number of different things, but also his big thing is that he has different avatars. And so whenever the world is in great danger, Vishnu will come down as an avatar and save the world through XYZ action. He'll come as all sorts of things. He's come as like a fish, a lion, a smaller human, a larger human, among other sort of things. But it's one each of those avatars. And I think I'm not as familiar with Christianity, but I believe in Christianity the next time that
Jesus,
I guess God or Jesus comes down is supposed to be the end of the world. And that's when he comes down to save the day.
So it depends, because here's the thing, sure. I will tell you, Revelations is something that was added to the Christian Bible many, 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 many centuries after it was actually written.
Mm-hmm.
So it does not actually have an actual connection to what was written in the New Testament. So some parts of it, but I don't know. Like, I thought parts of it though were laid out before Revelations as well, right, Ben?
Mm-hmm.
Like,
no, I believe so, because there's always been a belief in like the apocalypse.
No, not that. Revelations.
No, but that's what I'm saying. The people always had some kind of, like, they had to figure out what the apocalypse was going to look like. So the cultural idea.
Well, I mean, to be fair, how many times have we had the apocalypse predicted by certain groups of people in the U.S. in the past 5 years? Wasn't the world supposed to end on
the past couple weeks?
Yeah, the world was to end a few weeks ago.
Look, we're still here.
I think people want to predict the end of the world.
They always have.
Did you hear about that one woman that tipped a restaurant like $1,000 because she thought it was the end of the world during the eclipse, and then when the world didn't end, she demanded her tip back?
That's
funny.
Wild. the same philosophy is here with Vishnu as well. Vishnu has 10 avatars that he's supposed to get through. He's done 9, and the 10th one is Kalki, which is the final incarnation of Vishnu. He'll come down to sort of restart everything when that 10th
and he will occurs. He will look exactly like 100% complete form Zygarde, of course.
Yep, he will be 100% Zygarde, fully according to the stories. He'll be atop a white horse. His sword will be drawn, basically looking like the ancient Greek Apollo with the chariots in the sky. If everything, basically, when the world is at its worst, Kalki will come save the day and sort of restart everything. Which, you know, big fan, but preferably not now. That's my
because we're busy.
busy making content.
I do love that their types do reflect this Hindu belief too, because like especially Yveltal being dark type, it being the destroyer of energy, Zygarde being ground type, being like the grounded, you know, like mm-hmm. essence of control, and then I guess Zygarde being not Zygarde, Xerneas being fairy type. I feel like fairy type is the closest life giving type we have.
Well, and like in the fairy type,
maybe
is
besides grass,
it's like the fairy type is honestly like just different folklore and mythos connected. Like it's honestly mm-hmm. should be called like fae.
Mythical type. Well, but mythical is different. Myth type.
Yeah, that can be interesting as well. There's a lot of aspects of Hinduism you can see in the Aura Trio. We can shift on to something that's on equal par to the Aura Trio, Goldeen and Seeking.
Yeah, no, that I want to talk
powerful.
About. Tell us about it.
Yes. I was talking a little bit about the avatars of Vishnu previously, and Goldeen, Seeking, specifically the horn that Goldeen and Seeking have. I think both have the horn, right?
Yeah, they do.
is exactly like Matsya, which is the first avatar of Vishnu, whose story is remarkably similar to Noah's Ark. There is a big, I don't think it ends the same way, but it starts the same way. There's a big flood that occurs. I don't actually remember who starts it, whether it's a god or some natural occurring flood or whatever. The story is the exact same. Vishnu's first avatar, Matsya, comes down and assists I do not remember the individual's name. Let's see if I can find the story here. But then nevertheless, a flood occurs. Matsya it saves mankind from that great deluge, which is the first of the big world calamity events. And the horn in particular, you can see on Matsya, because the avatar is like a fish avatar. You can see a similar sort of looking horn on both.
Okay, according to Wikipedia, his name is Manu or Manu.
Yep, Manu, probably. The story behind it is that Manu's an ancient king, Manu protects this fish, who then ends up being Matsya, saves the day eventually. I think the story, if I remember correctly, is something along the lines of like, hey, you should really go fishing over there. And then Manu goes that way. A flood occurs. Manu is set and able to survive because he's over there as opposed to over here. And then reestablishes rights, reestablishes life through like sacrifices and standard ancient Hindu items that you tend to see. A lot of sacrifices back in the day that thankfully we do not do anymore.
Which, okay, and I feel like this is so fun. We're going to make connections. I'm pretty sure Sea King can learn surf, and I feel like that in itself is evidence of this, that you can sit atop Sea King, and he will carry you over the water, yes.
Absolutely. We can move on. Okay, let's go. So we've talked about Aura Trio, top of the list. We've talked about Goldeen and Sea King, again, top of the list in terms of like raw power. Let's go to another one that's in that same sort of vein, Hoopa. A fun character that they're. Hoopa is a fun character.
But the most annoying movie ever.
I was about to say the exact same thing. Look,
oh my god.
All love to Hoopa. Not exactly the greatest, not portrayed the greatest in the movies. But Hoopa, of course, is based on the jinn, which is sort of anglicized as genies, which are spirits from pre-Islamic Arabia and Islam.
Ben and I did a whole episode on it.
I was going to say, if y'all have listened to Ben Richten's Guide to Monsters
and Lore.
You can check that, depending on how you listen to podcasts, either up there or down there or to the left or to the right. I'm not 100% sure which direction you'd be going. But the episode is on this feed.
You can go backwards to find it. Just go backwards.
Just go backwards.
Just step backwards and don't look where you're going.
So the majority of Hoopa is based off of the genies of pre-Islamic Arabia and current day Islam, but there are aspects of it that seems very similar to other Hindu items, including the fact that if we're talking like the unbound version of Hoopa, I believe it has six arms. And that's similar to Shakti, which is Shakti is more of a concept than a god, because Shakti is sort of interpreted in a number of different areas, but it represents divine feminine power and energy in Hinduism, which is sort of essential to understanding how the universe works. In a way, similar to how mothers are the creators of life, Shakti is sort of in that same sort of vein. You can see there's a number of Hindu gods that have the ability to get multiple arms. So we'll talk about a couple later.
I mean, I guess we could say Hoopa understands how things work because they like literally have figured out how to make wormholes.
Yes, very true.
Hoopa's like, hey, Hoopa, I just made a wormhole. You want to come travel?
Have you thought about teleportation that doesn't actually break you down and rebuild you on the other side? It's called hole. We walk through it.
Okay, it is interesting, though, that Hoopa doesn't have a gender, because I feel like it should be female based on this mythos, but
this is me sort of interpreting Hoopa into a Hindu lens. I think it's far more likely that it's based on genies than it is on specifically Shakti, but just based on the look, the before and after of like, you know, the unbound versus the other form that I can't remember. It's far more based on the
bound.
Is it bound? Bound form, yeah.
I think it's far more based on genies. And like, I think genies aren't, they're either they're either explicitly gendered or they're just not gendered at all, which is probably in the same area.
It depends on the story.
Yep.
Honestly, after everything I'm going to be saying in this entire episode about various different gods, I could end it with depends on the story, because there are a lot of interpretations of all sorts of things here that are like, this is all true for this specific section of India, and it's not true in that way for anybody
anywhere else.
This is only true for about 400 million people.
I mean, that happens.
We can transition over actually to another Pokemon that I for the longest time thought was like, oh, this is explicitly Hinduism related.
I thought it was too. As of,
We're talking Medicham and Meditite here.
Yeah.
Which is
I always thought the next two were 100% like, you know, linked to Hinduism 100%.
So Medicham and Meditite have a very big inspiration from Shiva, or it looks like an inspiration from Shiva. It looks a lot like Shiva, if I'll be honest. Shiva is widely I say widely, again, this is to me specifically as a person that is born and raised from parents that are from the Tamil Nadu section of India. So if this does not align with Andhra Pradesh or Gujarat or Rajasthan or any other state, it's probably that difference. But it looks a lot like Shiva. Shiva's got a big for like two eyes and then like a third eye. That's like the all-seeing eye, and Medicham has a similar sort of vibe. It also looks like and I do not know if I'm pronouncing this right, which I kind of hope I am. Ardhanari, which is a fusion of Shiva and Shakti slash Parvati. So it is actually half man, half female, and it is literally down the center. So I believe the right hand side is the male Shiva, the left hand side is the woman Parvati, and it's a fusion of them that they do sometimes when causes for it.
When you need that sort of thing.
When you need it. When for some reason they decided to do the fusion dance and like Dragon Ball, and it was necessary to exponentialize their power.
Oh, excellent. Well, I also feel like the mega form of Medicham specifically is really Shakti influence. I mean, it doesn't have six arms, but it has six like ribbons.
Yeah, I mean, like without a doubt.
Yeah. Without a doubt, right. It's
the really, entire
this is,
like,
the
design.
Most, probably like, the most Hindu design we have. Yeah.
So I said, I've never not associated this Pokemon with that. I've always thought it was a very clear connection. I mean, you know, just my thought.
Yeah, no, I can definitely see the connections. And
that's true.
I like I said, I believe in it at least. I don't know if it's explicit, but that's my belief.
Well, Game Freak and Nintendo will never say, because nothing is ever explicit from them. So
true. The next one I'm not as confident, only because I can't explicitly say this is Hinduism, because a lot of people have this sort of concept. A lot of different cultures have the concept of the world turtle, and specifically Torterra and Terapagos.
In the
brand new games. A lot of different, I think I know Hinduism has it, obviously. Yep. I believe
there are certain American indigenous cultures that have world turtle stories, mm-hmm. too. It is a common belief that does show up kind of all over the world, actually. There are cultures all over the world that believe in the idea of the world either forming on a turtle or tortoise's back, sometimes being built onto the back, or sometimes being the back, or, you know, mm-hmm. I mean, just kind of, it depends. And we saw that influence too in all of our Avatar friends, you know, watching the lion turtles too. But I mean, anytime I saw Torterra, that's where my head went right away.
Sure, absolutely, yeah. And then it's also associated with another Vishnu's avatars, Kurma, the second avatar, which is literally just a tortoise. I mean, it's more than just a tortoise, but for the sake of the conversation, it is the turtle. When you think of Vishnu's avatars, you go, that's the fish one, that's the turtle one, this one's the man one, etc. And this one's absolutely the turtle or tortoise one. I actually don't know if it's specific whether it's turtle or tortoise, but the that one.
Yeah, but I mean, I like the idea. I love the whole world turtle concept and idea.
Mm-hmm.
And I was so happy when I saw Torterra revealed for the first time. I was like, yay, it's so great.
It's always very cool, yeah.
Yeah.
Let's move on to another Sinnoh starter. And actually, this specific association with the gods.
No, this is Buddhism.
This is not Buddhism.
This is Sun Wukong. This is literally Sun Wukong. This is literally Journey to the West.
Very true. However, Buddhism also started in India. So I'm just gonna say.
No, I know.
Buddhism started in India as a Sorry, this is where I because Hanuman as a god is one of my favorite gods just in general. His stories are fun, and the things that he supports and the way that he goes about things is very fun to me. So Infernape is where I'm going with this. Infernape, you know, the monkey fire starter that I think a lot of people went with because it was a firefighting type back when those were cool. And not overdone.
Listen, no hate on my man Embor, but he really started the downward spiral of that typing.
So Hanuman is a monkey god, so to speak, a divine monkey. He's a central character in the Ramayana, which is basically an epic about Rama, which is the, depending on your interpretation, I think 8th or 9th avatar, or 7th or 8th. It's somewhere in that ballpark. Because different people have different orders of things. Rama is looking, basically his wife Sita is kidnapped, and the entire story is about him trying to go and find his wife again. I haven't read the full thing because it's long and also in Sanskrit, it's a very fun story, and it's one of those recommended reads when it comes to the Indian culture stories, just because it's a very good one. Hanuman's also big in the Mahabharata and the Puranas. He's a god of wisdom, strength, courage, devotion, self-discipline, and a number of other things. He's Rama's right-hand man, so to speak, especially in the Ramayana, and the divine monkey. And the fun story is how he became a god, so to speak, which is always very fun. So I can go down this because I find this very fun, and also kind of associates it with the Infernape, so to speak. So Hanuman, as a child, mistakes the sun for a ripe fruit, and so jumps up to try to grab it because, you know, it's a ripe fruit. Now, depending on the text that you're reading and where you're reading it from, he either gets stricken down by Indra, the king of the gods, being like, "Why are you jumping at my sun?" Or like Icarus, just jumps too close to the sun and gets burned to ashes. And, you know, falls back to the ground. Either way, he is kind of broken, and in both stories, the gods help revive him, give him some powers as well as a sort of like a sorry, my bad. But the commonality is that he always ends up with a disfigured jaw, which is where you see Hanuman in particular. While the other gods sort of have a standard-looking human face, Hanuman is always seen with like almost like a swollen or broken jaw, which is kind of built into his characteristic, because he's another example of like, it's not your outside look, it's your inside look, because outside he looks like a person with a broken jaw, not exactly the best looking person, but then internally he's this wise and helpful sort of assistant that's trying to do his best to help out the world. Although he didn't start that way, he started off as a prankster, and that led down a rabbit hole of things that, like, there's one interpretation of the stories where because he was a prankster, being like, "Ooh, I got all these powers, let me just go fool around with the people," he, as punishment for that, loses his memories of his powers until Rama reminds him of his powers later on in the stories. He'd be like, "Hey, dude, you're actually really cool. Can you help me out here?" And it's like, "Oh, I am really cool. Sure, I'll help you out. Thanks for helping me with this powers thing that I forgot about."
That's literally so funny.
What? I'm oversimplifying this a lot. Can I? But yes.
No, I love this.
And I know Ben and I have talked about this a lot on Ben Richten's, about the commonalities we see between like religious and beliefs, and especially as ideas travel. Mm-hmm. So much of Hanuman really does, though, and again, I'm going to keep going back to this, and I love him, and I'm sorry. It really does have so many similarities to Sun Wukong. Mm-hmm. I mean, the depending on which version of Sun Wukong, or the Monkey King, depending on, you know, which version of Chinese lore and mythos we are talking about, you know, some of them do have very, very humble beginnings. Always a trickster, always a prankster, but then, you know, develops wisdom, develops, you know, insight. Also, you know, Hanuman, the whole hand gesture that often depicts in statues and stuff, very reminiscent of a lot of, especially like, you know, the entire Buddhist symbolism. So for like those who don't understand, like Journey of the West is an entire book about bringing Buddhism, which, you know, we're saying originated in India to China, or, you know, the foundations of Chinese Buddhism. And the fact that you see so many similarities here, I'm not making judgment or critique. I'm just saying, like, it's something that Ben and I have talked about a lot on Ben Richten's, about that we see so many similarities across cultures. It's something that, yes, I've actually been talking about with my students, as we've done a whole mythos and folklore unit the past few weeks. They're like, well, that reminds me of this. And I'm like, yeah, that it does. Or
yeah, because it probably is the same.
very similar. My reading group, because we do like leveled groups for the entire grade. My group is one of the higher ones. So we did like symbolism and we did Narnia. One of the little girls is very devout in her beliefs and was very much like, this reminds me of it. And then she started like listing off about like telling us about all this info about St. Peter. And I was like, yeah, but like that's how this happens. Like ideas kind of get reused or shared or copied, or they're played homage to. It's not necessarily meant to make fun or berate or belittle. It's just, this is how humans spread ideas.
Absolutely. I mean, so we've talked about a few already of how an idea that is established in India under Hinduism that seems to be unique to India is seen in an area of the country that is, or an area of the world that's completely different. So, for example, if I talk about just trying to, without saying names, a person is walking with another person of very big importance and comes across a river, and the river, through the powers of the gods, is parted so that that person is able to walk through. I could be describing Moses. I could also be describing the birth of Krishna and how he was born, and instantly, because of his powers, that his father, who was imprisoned by an evil king, escapes through these basically magical powers, effectively, is able to escape and go travel to, I believe, his cousins, and effectively switch the babies so that Krishna could stay alive and eventually grow up to defeat the evil king. Exact same concept of a river being parted. That seems relatively unique, and yet seen in both Christianity, or in the Abrahamic religions, and in Hinduism, in areas of the world that are thousands of miles apart.
Oh. Honestly, I'm learning so much about like other religious cultures just from this podcast. I didn't know that.
Yeah, yeah.
It's a fun thing as well. It's always cool to see different ideas and how they. It's my personal belief, and again, nothing is going to really prove this, is that these ideas aren't so much like explicitly Hindu or explicitly Buddhist or explicitly Christian, and more of just back in the day, this person had 50% of the idea, and that person had 50% of the idea, and throughout time, they've kind of just merged together. So now everybody has a river parting story. Everybody's got a flood and boat story. Everybody's got a story of trying to find their lost spouse, and it kind of just devolves into explanations and further to using culture to kind of link it from there.
So the social scientist in me has many hypotheses on this, and I do look at I don't know if you've ever done any reading on like evolutionary theory, especially like social applications of evolutionary theory.
A little bit,
especially the way it evolutionary theory has been applied to the monotheistic religions. And it is something that like I like to look at and look at, like, how did ideas and concepts change and grow? But I think that's a whole other discussion for another day.
let's finish the next few. Yeah.
Well, the next one, 100%. I mean, the name, dude, the name.
Yeah, the name kind of helps. So Yamask is Gen 5, I believe. And this is a slight reference here. I think the name is the name and background more than the actual like Pokemon itself, but there's a god of death and justice in Hinduism named Yama, who I believe is a twin to
somebody.
So there's Yama, which is the death and destruction one, and the twin is Yami, who is also known as Kalandi, who is one of the consorts of Krishna, which is the ninth or eighth, again, depending on how you read it, one of the avatars of Vishnu. The one I was talking about as a baby that parted the river is because of just raw power. What's the term that kids are using these days? Aura? Just aura.
Are they saying
that? I don't know. Some people are saying
my
just
students
aura.
Make fun of me on a daily basis for my slang, so...
The second to last creature on our list already it was embodied by maybe some other examples on this list, but we are talking about Machamp.
Yes.
Yes.
So Machamp, widely known for having four arms, and also being a WWE wrestler, and having a bluish sort of skin, which is very much in line with Shiva or Vishnu. Vishnu in depending on the state that you find him. It sometimes has four arms, or four, six, I believe, is typically what they can be associated with. And especially known for having bluish skin, which is a way of distinguishing from the regular folks who had brown skin. He had a sort of, I think the blue is supposed to represent that he was darker than the average Indian, so to speak. But the blue is just more unique. And then Shiva as well is also sometimes seen as like bluish or greenish skin, just like Machamp. And then Ponyta and Rapidash, I feel like every religion has some version of majestic steeds, and Hinduism is no exception. Ponyta, Rapidash, the steeds of the gods, which can be seen in ancient Greece. You have steeds with Helios, Nordic culture, the Skinfaxi, I believe, who are, again, legendary horses. And in Hinduism, the Ashvins have their own legendary horses as well. Also could be based on Kilin, which are legendary Chinese hoofed creatures that I probably butchered their name, and I apologize.
I mean, I think it's because humans have such a close relationship to horses. But yes, Ben's laptop just died, and we're at the end of our list. Good,
yep.
Honestly, can I just say thank you for putting this together? Thank you for sharing, you know, your own personal background too, and I really appreciate that.
Sure, of course. Yeah, it's always fun to talk about different religions and cultures and learning more about them.
Yeah,
and I hope I provided a little bit of that.
Well, now we gotta do a whole like holy episode at some point.
Yeah. Although, for timing purposes, we might have to wait 350 days or so.
Yeah, but, 350 days. We'll wait.
Yeah.
Start the timer, guys. Get in the comments and start the timer.
We could do Diwali, which is only 6-ish months away.
Okay.
The other big
one. I mean, Festival of Lights. I'm in. Let's do it.
Yeah, absolutely.
I will go to any festival that has food. That is my stance, and I am standing with it. Any holiday that has food, I'm there.
In that case, all of the quote-unquote smaller holidays in India, there's always food. So no, you don't have to worry. If you can find it, like, you need three people, and I think that's enough for like food to be made.
I was so happy. I had one of my students, they brought me, I have twins, and they brought me leftover desserts after Eid, as Ramadan ended.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, this is so good. This is the greatest thing ever.
Yep.
I like food. I like food.
Food is great.
Food is good.
Indian food is very
good. I do That's love Indian bias, food.
But also,
biryani is one of my favorite dishes in the entire planet. I love I love goat biryani.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, you don't like goat, so.
Well, I'm vegetarian, so I know. That kind of, yeah. So I can't confirm or deny that I like goat, because I don't know and probably won't know, but you know, who knows. But that's a perfect place to end this episode here. Try some biryani. I'll warn you, if you buy it, if you go to any proper Indian place, whatever spice level you're used to, drop it by a level. That's my recommendation. Okay, because Indians' default spice level is medium. So like,
I try to stick it out.
Or yeah, or fight it through. Either one, whichever.
I mean, after having Indian friends and then having Korean friends that also gave me food that made me cry. I at this point I'm just like, all right, whatever. Like, if I'm gonna die, I'm gonna die. Whatever.
Yep, that's how you're supposed to feel after good spicy Indian.
No, yeah, like, right, well, you feel great afterwards. You feel so good.
Mm-hmm. Sinus issues are not a problem. you just one good meal, and then literally just you're breathing better than you ever have before. You're smelling smells you didn't know existed, just out of, not from the food, but just from your nose being like. It's got a, you have five senses normally. Your sixth sense is just nose 2.0.
On that note.
Yeah, you have smell and this upgraded smell. But
on that note, I love you. Thanks, yes. Buddy. You're the best.
Of course. Great. For Ben, for Madison, for myself here, thank you very much for listening to this episode. And we will see you next time.